springtime here in North Dakota. Finally, we've done it. We've made it through winter.
I don't know. We might have a late season blizzard.
As is per usual. As is the custom, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Ice storm or something.
Mm. Welcome to the Soderstrom Bubble. That's Jen, the NHL History Girl. I'm Scotty Waz. We took last week off because I had the flu. I was dying. So now we're back. And we're going to talk some stuff. We don't know kind of what we're going to talk about. I have an idea of what I want to throw out there. The main topic this week, however, is referees. Because mm-hmm. we've gone over the evolution of the game. We've gone over the evolution of rules, equipment, players, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Referees, the whole abject situation of them, we've kind of avoided. I don't know if it was purposely or just the fact that they're kind of, all intents and purposes, just there.
Yeah.
So you're just like, hey, let's talk about referees. So I'm like, sure, why not? Let's talk about referees. I have nothing else slated for this, so. Referees, what, you know, it's not as it is today, where it's a two-referee system.
Yeah.
In fact, there, well, kind of, right? There was a two-referee system at one point. However, they were stationary and not moving around. Or was that the gold judges that they were?
They were both gold judges and referees.
They all inclusive?
Yeah.
So how did that start out?
It started out at the very beginning. There was just the gold judges. And there was a referee, but they were mainly there for calling like the what they called the major penalties at the time. So like it was like rugby or football, the major, you know, forward pass violations and that sort of thing. Like that's what they called. And then they were there for face-offs.
No, it's just was as much face-off heavy as it is today, or did they kind of just pick up the puck and go if there's an offsides? Like it was soccer where you stop it and start it like a foul.
You know, they don't talk too much about that, so I'm not entirely sure if...
Because it doesn't seem like the dots became a big thing until, like, after the Second World War,
yeah.
Almost.
Yeah. So, my impression is that they just went to center ice and dropped the puck there.
And that was, like, the all-purpose...
And that was the all-purpose, multifunctional. Okay. But I could be wrong on that, but that's my impression. So, yeah. And for a long time, I don't know how they just didn't figure out dropping the puck, but they would like lean over to place the puck on the ice. And as soon as they did that, it was fair game. So all these referees were coming up with like broken wrists, broken fingers, broken, you know, bruised. And like, it was just very odd how they didn't figure out it was easier to just like chuck the puck in there and be like, here you go, boys.
Well, maybe they thought it was just like lacrosse or wait till they get out and then start like a gentlemanly agreement kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because that's how lacrosse is they set the ball in the middle and the guys sit there and they go on a whistle. Maybe the whistle wasn't a thing yet. So.
No, but there was a lot of arm and finger damage because they couldn't figure out how to drop a puck safely.
Well, yeah, no, they dropped the puck. They let it sit there. They didn't really drop it. They just kind of placed it and then, ah.
Yeah.
I have Joe Sakic had a snowblower incident happen.
Yeah. So, and they didn't have whistles, they had bells. Like little handbells.
Oh, like you would ring, like.
Like, think school, town, like town crier.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Why bells? That seems so.
Well,
I guess it was at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Whistles was the whistle weren't invented? I guess that was not a thing.
Not yet. Mm. Not until, like, the 19 teens, I think. Mm. So
legit, there was no such thing as a whistle. Apparently. So they used bells.
Yeah.
That's got to be, like, if that held true today, like, all the scrums or after all the whistles, just people ringing bells would be like a freaking classroom or something like that.
Right?
Seems odd. Yeah. Now, were they as, yeah, now we said they were stationary behind the thing and you had the one roaming ref. When did they start getting rid of the gold judges behind the net? Because that seems, like, literally, not behind the net, behind the glass, like, literally on the playing surface behind the nets.
Yeah. They moved them once games became more formalized. Mm. So
once you kind of had leagues and associations and stuff,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah. So once they got the rules sort of ironed out, they had stands for fans, because as we talked about before, there weren't always bleachers or whatever for fans.
There weren't any, mostly not any boards.
Right. So once they had the boards and once they had the bleachers and things, they moved the goal judges there. And then they had their own little evolution because there was a light that they would flip. It was always the red light. Mm. And they would sit behind the goal in the stands. But the problem is they didn't have any protection in the stands. And so fans would do crazy things like physically restrain them from turning on the goal light. A couple of the goal judges were known to be dishonest. So you couldn't really trust what the referees couldn't really trust what they said. There were times when he actually had a player climb out of the bench and go around the arena, trying to attack the goal judge, or the coach would go around and try to attack the goal judge. So they started encasing the goal judge in these little cages,
Little penalty boxes, essentially.
Yeah, little platforms, just to keep them safe during the games and able to do their jobs. And then now, because teams have realized that, hey, that goal judge seat's worth a lot of money if we let a fan sit there. So most everyone has moved their goal judges up higher.
Yeah, they're not even there.
They're not visible anymore.
No, they're kind of just around somewhere.
Yeah, the theory was that if they, placed them at a better vantage point, they could, declare goals better or whatever. And in reality, the teams just wanted to sell that extra
two
space.
Seats. Yeah. Which I can understand that, but you get there's such a terrible vision of the ice down that low.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem worth it, but whatever. That's not me. That's why I don't own a team. But refereeing as a whole, they got whistles then.
Yes.
They got fancy sweaters.
Yes, they had cream-colored sweaters. They wore black slacks, cream-colored sweaters, white shirts, and black ties.
Very formalized.
Yes, very formal.
What kind of evolution was there with the referee? How much more of a part of the game did they become overall? Because it seems it's an interesting dichotomy.
Well, for a while, the rules of the game weren't officially, there was no official rule book. It wasn't codified until probably the 1920s when they started making extra official rules, things like penalty shots, things like
2 minute minors, 2 minute
right,
majors,
right? When goalies stopped serving their own penalties, when they started having all these extra rules about icing and all of these things, that's when they finally started having an official rule book.
Which seems silly when you say it out loud like that.
Yeah,
it seems very odd that you'd be like, this seems like it'd be a rule, but we should lay this out in a full book form.
Right. And a lot of the referees up until probably the 70s preferred to call games by common sense. They didn't really read the rule books per se. They just called games by what they assumed was common sense. Mm-hmm.
Is that better off or worse off, I guess?
I can't really say because
it seemed a little bit, in that time frame, everyone kind of settled it themselves and mm-hmm.
I think they were able to do it in part because it was such a small league that you knew all of the players and you knew what they were going to do. If you were in Detroit, you knew that Ted Lindsay was going to give you hell mm-hmm. as a referee. You just knew. Because that's what he did.
He knew Gordy was good for 2 or 3 elbows a game.
Right. But Gordy was very obedient. He would drop his gloves, slug somebody, he'd pick up his gloves and he'd go to the box without you telling him.
Right.
He just knew. And then there were a couple of guys who just would threaten you and wouldn't get off the ice and whatever. So the referees, one of the big referees, who's I think a Hall of Famer now, Mickey Ion, said once the puck drops, you and I, meaning him and the linesman, were the only sane people in the building. So their goal was to keep the game level as much as possible. And I think they thought they were there mostly as, like, keepers.
Like a peacekeeper?
Yeah.
Like the UN. They were the UN.
Yeah. Because one of them said, you know, I had a game with no penalties, and Phil Esposito got hooked, and I didn't call it. And Esposito came and said, you know, what the hell, man? And the referee said, look, I got a no-hitter going here. And then Phil's like, oh, okay, well, whatever.
Sure.
You know?
And he's like, all right, fine. Well, you got me there. And obviously, when you said, like, the late 60s, early 70s, when they started, like, the rule book became a thing, obviously, then you get more players in.
Right.
You need the need for more games, more officials.
Right.
Was there, I guess, but in your read, because you did read a fair amount for this topic.
Yeah.
Because you're like, because I think I wanted to record it sometime, like, late last week, when I was kind of delirious. And you're like, no, I need a couple more days for this book.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, was there such a gap from the referees in terms of the quality now that they were expanding and the need for more referees?
Absolutely. For a long time, it was sort of word of mouth. If you were a referee in a lower league and somebody saw you and you had a good game or whatever, they would mention to whoever they knew, hey, you know, there's this good referee over in Western Canada. You should check him out. So there wasn't any, I mean, there wasn't any serious scouting the way there is now of referees. It was, a lot of it was word of mouth. A lot of it was, they didn't have, like, training camps for referees until Scotty Morrison took over as the chief of referees. And, I mean, they had, like, referee schools that individual referees ran, and if you went to one of those, that's how you got your foot in the door and you could get into the NHL or the WHA or, you know, whatever. But yeah, the thing with the late 60s all the way through the 70s is it was like the sharp spike in, like, the enforcer types, the goon types. If you look at the 70s, the penalty minutes are way out of line with almost any other decade, except maybe the 80s. But, I mean, it's just this huge spike in fighting and misconduct and all of these things. And so the refereeing system definitely changed a lot during that time period, because they created an official NHL camp, and then they created a rookie camp for possible referees. It was almost like an audition camp. And then once you got through the audition, you went to the regular camp. And then once you went through the regular camp, they would send you to the AHL for a year or two. And then they'd call you up for a game or two in the AHL. They'd send you back down. It was almost like being
an AHL player.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, was there, where is it a graduate system where you start as a linesman and go to referee, or was it a referee all the way through?
There were some guys who switched from referee to linesman, and then there were some linesmen who went to referee and went, holy shit, I'm just going to stay a linesman.
Well, I think, you know, I think when you're in that thing too, like if you're a referee and you go to linesman, I would think that would be a huge switch too, because the linesmen are very, very active. I think more active than people give them credit for.
Yeah. But they also don't have to make the really high pressure decisions.
Sure, no, that's true too.
Yeah.
But, you know, icings, whether or not to call off an icing or not.
Sure.
But nowadays with offsides, if you go, you say it's good and they take it to review for 45 minutes.
Yeah. Well, they actually started video review. The technical capacity for video review became possible in the 70s. Hmm. And so that was how they were judged on how well they were doing their jobs. Like if there was a call that they weren't certain about, you know, they could actually, the head of officiating could actually go to the tape and then go back to the referee or the linesman and say, hey, you screwed up. No, you're fine. You know, here's the tape. So that's where they really began the whole evaluation and ranking system, is once video review also came into play, because you could look back and see, you could judge basically based on the video angles and whatnot, what the referee was doing or not doing, or, you know, the point where they lost control of the game or whatever. So it's really, that's when the really modern refereeing system came into being, was the 1970s.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, they always say that a good ref, you never know his name, but it seems like everyone remembers like a lot of these names. Like I don't know. It seems like the good refs are the ones you actually do remember their names.
Yeah, like Bruce Hood.
Yeah.
Andy Von Helleman.
When they had their names on their jerseys, even.
Yeah. I hated when they changed back from that. Mm-hmm. And that was Gary Bettman's doing, because the NBA didn't have names on there, so why should the NHL?
Which I guess I could understand for abusive officials from the fans. That would help a little more.
Yeah. Well, here's a fun fact. The NHL did not have an abusive officials penalty or punishment or whatever you want to call it until 1982.
Interesting.
Yeah.
wonder what changed that.
The referee who got punched by Paul Holmgren got that changed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Paul Holmgren just sort of got wound up and punched the referee in the chest. And after that, they made an abusive officials rule.
Yeah, I would think so. I think when you get physically abused and punched in the chest.
But the thing is, they've been physically abused, like, all this time.
Sure, but when...
Like, I mean, there were coaches that would come out onto the ice and punch you. Like, you know, there were players who would come up and punch you or shove you or mm-hmm. whatever. So for the longest time, abusive official was just normal. And then all of a sudden...
Because of a flyer, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Just because it was a flyer. Just like, nope. Nope, can't have this.
Yeah. And at first it was there was no limit, I think, on how many games they could get for abusive official. And the first big one was Tom Lysiak.
Yeah.
For tripping Ron Foyt. And he got 25 games. And then they decided, well, that's too severe. So then they changed the penalty so you could get 5, 10, or 20, depending on...
Severity,
yeah.
We saw that recently with the Dennis Weidman thing a couple years back.
Yep.
And then he got... I think what got amounted to 10 games money-wise, but he sat out 18 through deliberation.
Yeah.
So he got the back pay. And then the referees, or the linesman, suing him now.
Yeah.
Because he can't skate anymore because he's got post-concussion syndrome.
Yeah.
So that was a fun debacle. We were just like, yeah, the lineman knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not going to get into his head. Anyway. Two referee system.
Mid-90s. They actually tested a system where they had one referee on ice and one up on a chair, almost like a tennis umpire.
Seems weird.
So like mid-ice. Yeah, they would park a guy.
Like a volleyball referee or something. Yeah, like
in
tennis.
The high chair. Yeah.
Jesus. God, that would look way out of place. Like maybe have like one guy in the press box just sitting in the command center and refereeing that way, but not in a freaking high chair.
Yeah.
Where he can be easily pelted by fans.
Yeah, no one liked that idea.
Really?
The NHL loved it.
Of course they did.
And no one else. Everyone else was like, screw this. This is terrible. Stupid. Yeah.
And the referees created their own officiating association. Like, we need a union for this. Stop this garbage.
The officials actually formed their own union in 1969 after a brief, I think, off-season strike.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because they wanted a union. They wanted better pay, they wanted better control, because you have to understand that as long as Clarence Campbell ran the league, he was the one who made all of the decisions about player punishments, referee punishments. I mean, they had a head of officiating, but he was mostly a figurehead, and he was mostly there to hire and fire
mm-hmm.
the referees. He wasn't really there for...
He didn't have any kind of clerical purpose.
No, not really. He was just sort of there to gather in the flock, sign their contracts, and send them on their way with the schedules.
So he was Greg Sherman before his time. Excellent.
Yeah, and for a long time, it was Carl Voss who used to play in the NHL. And that wasn't unusual for a long time. That was not unusual to have a pro player turned referee. And now you won't see that anymore. The last one, I think, was Paul Stewart. There might have
been. I think that's probably it.
One more. There was one in the AHL who'd been an NHL player. I don't know if he ever made it to the NHL or not, but yeah, Paul Stewart is the last one, basically.
Karvov's father of comedian Rich Voss. I don't think that Louis Beans. I don't think that's right, but
yeah. So
it's odd that you don't think that now because it hasn't happened. Like player going to referee,
yeah.
You immediately go player broadcasting career.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But now it's that like that seems so foreign, like so far away.
But it makes so much sense to me.
It does a little bit, but it doesn't too, because it's just like, all right, these guys screwed me over this way. I'm going to screw these guys in the complete opposite way. Like, I don't know. It doesn't seem. I can understand like the players maybe having a better like personality towards them, like a better you know, kind of peer-ish relationship with them, and that he could maybe explain to them a little bit better. But it just still seems odd to me, even now.
Yeah. But for a long time, because Clarence Campbell was in charge and he made it known that he was in charge, he was almost like Vince McMahon, like, I am the word of God.
Oh, God, I want that to happen.
So he was very much like, I am the word of God here. And so if a referee screwed up in a major way, they didn't go to Carl Voss.
Mm-mm.
For a quote, they went straight to Clarence Campbell, and you know, so that was kind of an awkward situation.
Kind of just like, well, I'm just here collecting a paycheck at this point for old Voss there.
Yeah, and at least one referee quit because Clarence Campbell would not publicly support him. Mm. You know, it just that's kind of the way it was, like. If Clarence Campbell saw you as a referee getting manhandled by one of the players, like that's it, you were done. Especially if it was like a high tension, high publicized way, like that's it, you were done. That was your last game, right there, bam, done. Just very, very punitive. Not a lot of communication. If you were going to learn anything about refereeing, you were going to learn it from one of the other referees.
Exactly. Kind of like on the job training as it happens.
Yeah.
Kind of bizarre.
Yeah. Very odd old system. Mm-hmm. One of the referees from the 70s remembers going to camp, and one of the old school referees, like the old timers, skated up to him, like, flapped the rule book open and closed in front of his face and said, there, you've officially opened the and examined the rule book, and skated off. So it was kind of a cowboy time back in the day.
Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah.
I'd say just a little bit.
Yeah.
What kind of good stories you got? Any kind of fun referee stuff?
I have a couple from the very early days.
Just drop every... Just knock into your microphone a couple more times.
I picked up Dick Irving Jr.'s book, Tough Calls. Wow. And so it's full of stories with referees and things. So this one is 1899. It's Winnipeg versus, Montreal. And I'll just read it to you because it's fairly short. Gingras, the Winnipeg Rover, received a blow across the back of one leg from Bob McDougall, went down, and was carried from the ice. When referee J.A. Finley awarded McDougall a penalty of 2 minutes, the Winnipeg team refused to continue, arguing McDougall should be put off for the match, being tossed out. The referee went to the dressing room to debate the matter with the Winnipeg team, and in the meanwhile, 8,000 people staged a continuous uproar. The referee reappeared, announced he'd been too insulted, and left for home. After further delay, during which a conference was held by officials of both teams, two of them took a sleigh to Mr. Finley's home and coaxed him to return to the arena. Upon the referee's arrival back at the game 1 hour and 5 minutes after play had stopped, he gave Winnipeg 15 minutes to return to the ice. On their failure to do so, he then awarded the game to the Victorias.
What a batshit crazy thing. And that's before turn of the century things.
Yeah.
You had to take a sleigh to his house? What the hell?
Well, it's winter, right?
No, so. I get it, but still.
Yeah, it's just wildness. If you go on Google, and Google Ron Asselstein tackle, there's this great video. An angry fan got over the boards and onto the ice and was going to tackle the referee. Well, Asselstein used to...
I think I remember that hit. He just blew him off.
Well, background, he actually played football and tried out for the Alouettes and got cut. But he was a longtime football player, and he's a big dude. Mm. Like, he's a very large man. And so he gets up a full head of steam and just, he's like, this one is for every heckle we have ever received, and just took the guy down in a classic freight train tackle. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. The NHL mandated that all of the referees had to start wearing helmets. And so James Duthie and Kerry Fraser got together and did a video on how to handle Kerry's hair under the helmet.
Yeah. I think I'm still in Canada for that one.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff about Kerry Fraser and his hair.
Have you read his book?
Yeah, actually.
How was that?
Yeah, it was pretty good. I wish there was a little more depth to some of... It's sort of really focused around, like, five big events, and I really wish there was a little bit.
Like, almost a biographical thing, yeah, rather than just the events and why he did this, that, and then the other thing.
Yeah.
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 That's cool. Any other stories off?
Yeah, there was a referee named George Hayes. He ended up getting fired for insubordination. There was an annual meeting where all of the referees and linesmen were called. And so they're sitting there, they're called into the board meeting, they're all lined up across the room, and they're thinking, okay, this is where they tell us we're fired, or don't do this, or don't do that, or make sure you do this, or make sure you do that. And Carl Voss would just simply stand up and say, gentlemen, these are your referees and linemen for the season. Any objections? And no one would object, and no one would ask any questions, and then they would leave the room, and that was it. George Hayes never showed up for those meetings. Never. Not once. He was like, I'm not here for a cattle call.
Fair enough. That's a fair, good point as any.
Every once in a while, they would do like fitness tests and eye tests for the referees. It wasn't like an annual thing or anything. They just would like do it randomly, like spot check, I guess. And Hayes refused to do it. And Clarence Campbell got angry and said, why? And Hayes said, well, I already do my own eye test every day. Clarence is like, what? Explain. And Hayes said, well, sure. Every time I sit down at the bar, I make it a point to read all of the whiskey labels across the bar.
There we go.
That's how he got fired for insubordination.
Yeah. That'll do it. Did Wyszynski take him out to that bar? Sorry, Jay. You're not listening.
There's anyway. There are some pretty famous names from back in the day. Red Story is one. Mickey Ion is another. The Koharski thing.
Have another donut done.
Yeah. The referees got fired, and then they got rehired, and then they got fired, and then they got rehired, and they got fired, and then they got rehired. Like, literally, he would walk out of the room and be like, the head of officiating would walk in and be like, you realize you're fired, right? And they're like, well, we can't support what's going on here, so yeah, we know, we're fired. And he would walk out of the room, and he'd come back a little while later. He's like, okay, you guys are rehired. Like, and it just went on and on and on. And Koharski was saying that when he refereed Game 7, all the fans, like a ton of the fans, had Dunkin' Donuts boxes that they were waving around at him and like pressing up against the glass. And he said people had donuts for earrings. I'm like, how do you do that? Like, how do you comfortably make donuts into earrings?
I wonder if it's earrings or earmuffs. I don't know.
That's what I'm wondering. But he said that was kind of hilarious to him. He actually, after that happened, he was actually offered a partnership in a donut shop.
Of course he was.
And it turns out he doesn't like donuts, so he turned it down.
Well, just make the money, Tom. Like, like, you don't have to eat them. Like, the contract doesn't say you have to eat them. You can just, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. it's kind of wild. You look at the pay for officials. It went from like $20 a game to now they make 100 and some odd thousand a season.
It's pretty good.
There's a seniority scale. You start out at like the rookie pay level and you work your way up.
So any kind of job. I'm sure performance bonus and things
like
that.
Yeah, but back in the day they would give you like your per game pay and then they would give you a per diem for being on the road. But you were on your own when it came to making like travel arrangements and hotel arrangements. They did insist that you use a sleeper car. And that's one of the other things that George Hayes got in trouble for was that he wanted to save some of the money. So he would travel overnight in like regular economy class and not in a sleeper. And so he kept getting in trouble for that because he was trying to save money, which, you know, I don't blame him being paid like $10 a game.
Right. It's just like, dude, then you pay my sleeper car. Like,
right. And nowadays, the NHL takes care of all of that sort of stuff.
Well, yeah, obviously now because it's so spread out. Like, you have to almost take care of your guys that way.
Yeah.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, then there we go. We have ourselves referee story, so you can stop bitching about us not talking about referees, all none of you. But we figured we might as well cover that. Something that I neglected to talk about before the show is we'd like to thank all the Patreons, the patrons, the people who give us money to talk about stuff and things and stuff, and we appreciate it. It helps keeps us going, helps fund some stuff, and helps keeps a little nest egg away for trips, draft trips, and maybe stadium series trips. We'll see how that goes. So far, we haven't rejected. Woo! So we'd like to thank Sean, Angela, Mitch, Chris, Ethan, Matthew, Trista, Mark, Damon, and Brian. Thank you guys very much. If you guys want to sign up, we might be changing the rate structure a little bit. So patreon.com/faceoffhockeyshows where you can go get it on. We realize, hey, three reward tiers, probably a little too much for this garbage of a show. So we will redo that and then go from there. So thank you all. Patreon.com/faceoffhockeyshow. It's Hockey Day in Canada.
Ooh.
Which doesn't have as much stroke as it used to.
No.
Mostly because they do that hometown hockey thing every weekend.
Yeah.
So I don't know why you have that and then that. There's also Hockey Day in Minnesota yesterday as well.
Yeah.
Which I...
Minnesota is very... It's like...
Protective?
Canada South, I guess.
I guess.
Like...
Very protective. Oh, we're the state of hockey, everybody.
Yes.
So...
Yeah.
It's like like Texas high school football, but high school hockey.
Basically, that's really how it works.
Yeah. So that happened, and you know, I don't know. It is what it is. You know, I don't know how. I don't know. I don't have an affinity for it as much as I used to. I guess.
No, I used to get excited about it because it was like cool stories, like little town location, you know. And they would cover stuff that they didn't cover otherwise, and they're like, yay! And then now it's like year-round hometown hockey and this and that, and I'm just like, meh.
Yeah, we've heard these stories before. Yeah. You know, it's not as special, I guess, as the how you can say it.
Right.
So, but I guess it's a Rogers thing. They want to be more in the community, and I would like to see the NHL do something, or the U.S. do something like that. Hockey Day in America really doesn't have the same panache that Hockey Day in Canada does.
But I feel like you get some pretty cool stories out of it.
Oh, I'm not saying you don't, but I don't think that the hype surrounding it as... I don't know. It doesn't seem equal, and I guess it shouldn't be.
No.
But I don't know. It just seems forceful. I don't know. Like, I don't know how to explain it in that in a term that makes sense to me. But I don't know. It just seems that NBC screws it up a little bit more.
NBC screws everything up.
Yeah.
So.
We'll see how they do with the Olympic hockey coverage. It's going to be great. Dale Jr. is going to be at the Winter Olympics, by the way. Did you notice that? Did you hear about that?
No.
He's doing, like, he's NBC's new NASCAR guy. So they're trotting him out at the Super Bowl. They're trotting him out at Pyeongchang Olympic. Wow, okay, this is going to be, what? What?
Like, why is he there?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Because he's Dale Jr. He's known worldwide. I mean. Uh-huh. And that's the only time a Redskin fan's going to be at the Super Bowl for a while because they're not going nowhere. Also this week, the Willie O'Ree 60th anniversary of him breaking the hockey color barrier.
Yes.
You are you don't seem as excited because you have some tings about this, some little couple hangups maybe.
It's irritation, I guess, because yes, he did break the barrier.
Is this like the original six for you?
A little bit. I mean, yes, he did break the barrier, and he should absolutely be celebrated for that. But they never, ever talk about the fact that it took, like, what, 13, 14, 15, somewhere in there. Like, it took years and years and years before there was another black player. Like,
60 would put it, what, 57? 58?
Yeah.
1958?
Yeah.
And then George Marston didn't come in until at least 74, 75?
Yeah.
So, yeah, almost 20 years.
Yeah. So they never, ever mention how long it took to get another black player. And then, you know, another one after that.
Or another diverse player. Like, not even...
Right. Like they never mention that there was a Chinese player in the league before.
No.
There was a black player.
Right. Well, sorry, it's not as sexy.
No, yeah. It's not. And so I guess I really hate that it's like this once a year pandering to diversity.
No, Jen, hockey's for everyone.
No.
Jen, no, hockey's for everyone, though.
No.
Kid Rock's playing the All-Star game. Hockey's for everyone.
You're really trying to push my buttons.
Kinda,
now.
Kinda, yeah. Kid Rock's doing great. Look, Hulk Hogan's band couldn't make it, so they had to get the next best thing in Kid Rock.
Oh. Hockey is not for everyone because they keep pandering to the same people over and over and over, and it's an audience they're not reaching. So at some point, you got to change your...
Hockey's not for everyone because skates cost $1,000.
Right.
You know, like...
Right.
You need someone like... You need a Stephen Marbury type.
Yeah.
Who will have their signature skate... That's $100, and it's top of the line stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, if you watch that Starberry documentary, that little 30 for 30 short, like it's fantastic about what he did and how much revenue he actually made off of this. And the NHL needs something like that.
Yes,
in a big way. They don't need to put frickin' Jonathan Toews' face on toast.
No,
you don't need that.
No,
you need affordable hockey.
Yes, and not only that, but. You need more initiatives that are aimed towards lower-income families, that are aimed towards kids with disabilities, that are aimed towards girls, that are aimed towards minorities. I mean, you don't see the NHL going into Native communities. You see the players themselves doing that.
Yeah.
That's up to Carey Price, and that's up to...
Sandy McCarthy.
Joey Juno.
Gino Olchek.
Tutu.
Jordan Tutu.
I mean, and it shouldn't be on the minority players themselves to be reaching the minority community. And that's one of the huge problems I have with the NHL, because it's always on the players themselves to reach those communities rather than the NHL doing anything about it. So I have a lot of issues with... But like I say, Willie O'Ree was the pioneer, and he should absolutely be celebrated for it. And he should probably be in the Hall of Fame for it. In fact, I honestly do think he should be in the Hall of Fame for it. So there's no issue there with that. It's just the way he's trotted out this once a year. Like, look at us, guys.
Twice a year.
Well, twice a year.
You forget Black History Month.
Yeah, yeah. Which they don't really do much with.
No, they really don't.
They're like, hey, everyone, it's Willie O'Ree. Like, and I'm
elsewhere,
like,
Mike Marson's driving a bus somewhere in downtown Toronto, like, ready and willing and able to jump out. And they're just like, nah, we're good, Mike. Don't worry about
it. I mean, you could have Mike Marson, Tony McKegney.
Dirk Graham.
I mean, there's
Grant Fuhr, for Pete's sakes.
Yeah.
You got a new documentary coming out that Adam Scorgi, the production company, I think, is doing.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like you don't have these other role models that you could bring out and talk about during Black History Month. So, dear God, why aren't you doing it? You know, like, why don't you reach out to these alumni and invite them to run some clinics and invite them to be more involved? It should not be on the minority players to do it themselves.
No.
That's not how this is supposed to work.
No.
So, yeah.
It seems odd.
That's my rant about.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. Really, Willie O'Ree should be in the Hall of Fame as a builder.
Yes.
Because his playing days weren't that great.
No. He did not play a whole lot of games. No. He didn't score a lot. He didn't. But he was the first.
Exactly. And you have to honor that. And I think because he played such a more prominent role
after
the fact, it helps out too.
And the thing is, he's so graceful. Like, he's just so gracious about the role he played and what he's expected to do now that, you know, it feels really awkward to complain. Because he does put a lot of effort into it.
Sure.
But it's the same thing. It shouldn't be on him to be the sole ambassador for black hockey.
I will say this. As great as Grant Fuhr was,
uh-huh.
He shouldn't have been the first black guy in the Hall of Fame.
Should have been Willie.
It should have been once Grant Fuhr and well, hell, Mike Morrison had a decent career. Uh-huh. Tony McKegney had a very solid career. Dirk Graham was half black.
Yeah.
He had a good career. Jerome McGinley. Once you start seeing those guys in there, why don't the writers do something? Like, like, I understand it's a cloak and dagger situation with this Hockey Hall of Fame voting, but goddamn, like, why don't you wise up to this fact that the NHL's putting him out there on display and you're still blind to him in the voting?
Yeah.
It makes no sense that as these black players are excelling, you're still not recognizing the pioneer who was able to get that to happen.
Right.
And still played a prominent role in a lot of these guys going forward.
Right.
Doesn't make sense why he wasn't in before. I mean, Grant Fuhr was going to get in regardless.
Yeah.
Put Willie O'Ree in, for Christ's sake. Don't pull this Pat Burns BS.
Yeah. Well, and they're doing it with women, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only women that they have in are very recent, which is not to say they don't deserve it. They do deserve it. But there are women who deserve it just as much and who are being left out. And they are very much the pioneers. Mm-hmm. Fran Ryder, Marguerite Norris, Aaron Witten. I mean, come on. Like, let's get with the program.
You can't do really popular women just to get the women's eyes on it. You have to actually go below the surface and dig a little deeper.
If you're going to be serious, I mean, if you're going to do this, be serious about it.
Exactly.
That's all I ask. It's just like, be honest and serious about it.
Though, so, as devil's advocate, women's hockey in the infancy stage in comparison to other hockey leagues.
Absolutely.
Therefore, I can understand why they're going it, but at the same time, it's like, okay, we've gotten past this. Why are we not inducting at least one woman a year? You have two slots every single voting time.
And you're failing to use them.
You're failing to use them at all. They're not rollover minutes. You can't take, it's not going to be, oh, we get four next year. No, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Yep.
So, I don't know. Shocking, the end of the Hall of Fame voting. It's so terrible. It took Harmelov like 40 years to get in. And that was only because it was a weak Hall of Fame class. Whatever. Do some cards. I'm rageful. That looks like Keith Kachuk. What's going on? All right. 1990 scorecards, Premier Edition. Curtis LeCision.
He was on the Battle of the Blades.
Was he?
Yeah.
God, that was a bad show.
I love that show. That's the only time I've liked figure skating in my life.
The only good thing about it is it put PJ Stock in a Pampers commercial or a Depends commercial. That was the only good thing that came out of it.
Well, there was Jeremy Roenick making weird, creepy, awkward comments.
This will be Jeremy Roenick.
Yeah.
Being frat boy dude. Like, he's Vince Vaughn in everything Vince Vaughn does. He's hockey's Vince Vaughn. Messier.
Yeah, nothing you've never not heard before.
Douchebag. Vinny Dampfhouse.
I think he ran like a salon spa for a short time.
Vinny Dampfhouse, really?
Him and his wife, yeah.
For a guy who didn't have much flow, I find that shocking.
Yeah, I think he and his wife owned one in Montreal.
Makes sense. Very underrated Vinny Dampfhouse, I think.
Yeah.
Underrated guy who doesn't get the credit he deserves.
Yeah.
Something called a David Shaw. Apparently he was an alternate captain for the Rangers at one point in time.
No.
Andrew Castles.
Oh, God. No, nothing really good.
Oh, look at this. Oh, look at this beauty right here. Darian Hatcher. Look at that coif. First overall draft pick. Like, that mullet, like the hat, won't even fit over top of it. He's like, no, look at the business and party. My God. That's a nice hat, though. If it wasn't a snapback, it'd be fantastic. Darian Hatcher.
I have a picture of him. What's the MLB team down there?
Down where, in Dallas?
Yeah.
Texas Rangers.
Yeah, so I have a picture of him coming out of, like, the Rangers with dugout with the cup.
Oh, nice.
And he's dressed like total dad mode.
Of course. They call that Texas casual. Daryl Sador.
He liked to leave his the tongues out on his skates, and they would sort of flap around, and yeah,
it's kind
of
weird.
Yeah,
that sounds weird. Yeggs, Yarmer Yager.
He mentioned in an interview on the radio once that he liked Kit Kats. Fans sent him over 1,000 Kit Kats, and Jesus. He later said that he sat down and ate them all. Like, not at once, but he did eat them all.
I hope
all.
Not at once. Like, he'd die. Blood sugar would spike over to 8,000.
And there was a stretch along the highway between, like, his house and the practice arena where the cops would continually pull him over and give him speeding tickets, and he would just, like, shove them in his... In the...
Glove compartment?
The glove compartment. And the team would get calls like, yes, hello, Yarmir Yager has 32 unpaid parking tickets. Can you have a word with him?
Listen, Badger, we need to talk. Scotty, we have to have a talk. The hell.
And it turns out he said that he was speeding because he was he was nervous driving and he just wanted to get there as fast as possible.
That makes sense. I can understand that. New country. And
yeah, so he would just, like, put his foot down and, like, get there as fast as possible.
The Euro beats, I'm sure they could have done without, but whatever. Baba! Love it when they call me big. Baba! Michel Goulet.
I already told you my best story about putting beer on the coach's tab.
Chris Terreri.
Not a whole lot about him.
I think it was him and Froese. No. God damn, who was it? It was him. It was Terreri and somebody else, I think, were the first goalies to put water bottles on their nets in college.
Yes, yes. Yep.
Was it Froese? I know Froese did in the NHL and the Edmonton Oilers complained about it.
Yeah, because Glenn Sather said, what do they want next? A bucket of fried chicken?
Yeah, exactly. So Terreri, when he played...
Terreri was the first to do it in college.
Yeah, Providence. Yeah. So that's a
There's
fun
a fun fact.
I actually put that... That's actually what it... Like, I think on his Wikipedia page is my little absurd goalie Monday about it.
Yeah.
Darren Turcotte.
Nothing really.
Well, stick handling school he's done for years. Him and Alfie.
Yep.
They do a lot of that. Dean Evason. Now a coach.
Nothing much.
Nope. Charlie Huddy.
Nah.
Doug Smale. No. Dave Manson. Does he look like Keith Kachuk in this one?
He does.
It's kind of weird. Doesn't have the rip sauce on his face like Kachuk would. All right, here we go. Pack number two.
Dave Manson. Oh, Dave Manson, he got hit in the throat, so he ended up with a little, like, a little voice damage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's why he had that odd...
Like, raspy voice.
Yeah, it's because he had some, like, larynx damage.
Hey. Chris Chelios.
Oh, God, he's obnoxious.
Very, loves his surfing.
Yes.
Loves his surfing.
He was in the locker room once, and they were making a big deal about guys from Cornell University in the NHL and making it big. And Chris Chelios was they were talking about Hall of Famers and then Cornell, and Chris Chelios is like, yeah, big deal, and they're going to be in the Hall of Fame. And they're like, well, Chris, what are you going to do? He's like, I'm going to live forever.
He's halfway there. Garth Butcher.
Yeah.
No. My most hated player of all time, Esa Tiikkanen.
Oh, there's a crap ton about him. like a crap ton.
Is there one that you can stand out?
The Caps were playing.
The Red Wings. He missed the open net.
S was living in a hotel, and it happened to be the same hotel that the opposing team was staying at. So he made a big point of being in the lobby, like, "Hey guys, how's it going?" You know.
Jesus Christ.
And then he and his wife went for dinner, and the team was in the hotel restaurant for dinner. He's like, "Hey guys." He sat right next to them. And the next day, the coach was like, "Could you lay off with the ticket?"
Yeah, exactly. Jesus
like, Christ. He shadowed us at the goddamn hotel.
You got a few Selkie votes for that. Bob Carpenter.
Nah. No.
Jan Eriksson.
Not really.
No. This is called a shadow card. License to tailgate.
That was his job.
Very shut down guy. His son, terrible. Tim Eriksson. Didn't really make it. Golden Brett.
There's a story that I would love to confirm, and I heard this in an interview with the old Blackhawks like dressing room attendant, mm-hmm. that Brett, as a child, got banned from the room because he took the trainer's handsaw. Like the, you know, the one they use for trimming down sticks. He took the handsaw and like took it to the chairs and stuff in the dressing room and like cut the legs short and
See,
shit.
He looks like a Dennis the Menace type.
He seems like it. So he got blackballed from the dressing room for that.
Plus minus season leader of 1989-90, Paul Cavallini. He got a special card named after him. How about that?
He lost a piece of his fingertip
in
a game. And somehow a radio DJ got a hold of it and was going to auction it off. It was the weirdest thing. Like, why would you do that?
Freaking Morning Zoo. Selke Award winner in 1989-90, Rick Meager.
Yeah.
Steve Leach of the Washington Capitals. Rich Sutter.
When they were born... The family farm didn't have electricity, which is odd because if you look on there, you can read off his birthday.
63?
Yeah.
Wow.
The family farm didn't have electricity.
That's weird.
Yeah.
It was Viking Alberta, though. I think they still hadn't discovered it yet. Dean Kennedy.
Yeah.
No. Phil Housley.
Nothing really good about him.
No.
Kind
of, he seems like a straight-laced guy.
He's a very quiet guy.
Yeah.
Most everything I find about him online is just some little quote about, well, you know, I passed the puck and blah, blah, blah. Like, it was just very quiet.
Apparently, he didn't take any media today.
Oh?
Because of Jim Johansson passing.
Okay.
Because Jim Johansson gave him a chance with the World Juniors, one goal.
Sure.
And, yeah, he's pretty shaken up about it from all I hear. Russ Courtneau.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bobby Probert.
I have a picture of him meeting Hacksaw Jim
Duggan,
the wrestler.
Yeah,
that's his name, right?
Yeah, Jim Duggan.
Yeah, yeah. And Jim is taller than Probert, and Probert's like in his gear and on his skates.
Yeah, no, Jim Duggan's a mountain of a man.
Yeah.
I always wonder if Bob Probert was like the basis of the goon.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Like, because in that time frame, like he seemed like the goon had that kind of build to him.
Mm-hmm.
Goon's actually selling cars. Guy who played the goon, I think, is somewhere in Minnesota. He's a used car salesman now. Shocking. Finally, Brendan Shanahan.
I have this great picture of Shanahan, like wild-eyed, like crazy eyes, hanging halfway off the glass in the tunnel, like that angled pane of glass,
mm-hmm.
in the first couple rows. Like he's up, like hanging, like up from the top of it, and you got Ken Danico behind him, like yelling and trying to pull him down, and his sweater is stretched out like this. And I'm just like, this is a glory. I mean, Shanahan is just like wild-eyed, seeing red, like ready to punch somebody. And he's like hanging off the protective boards in the tunnel.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Insane.
Apparently he wore the same shoulder pads from like when he was 12 through most of his career.
Yeah, that was a big thing.
Because Brodeur did it too. Yeah.
But I mean, with players, you can get away with it. And especially a lot of guys like the older, closer shoulder pads, because I was talking to one when I used to was an ECHL locker room attendant, Caleb Toth, who Hall of Fame lacrosse player for the Calgary Roughnecks and Toronto Rock. I asked him, like, why? Because he had a beaten up gear too. He's like, why do you use that? He's like, well, I tried the new shoulder pads and I separated my shoulder like 3 times. Mm. So I went back to these ones. I haven't had a problem since. And, like, also those older ones, are you can maneuver so much easier in them. So if you're a skills guy, you kind of just, you're able to turn your body a little bit more, a little bit faster. So then he hooked up with the mascot handler chick, like the day after they got eliminated. So I was like, wow, that's kind of weird. Sure. Good job, buddy, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Then they tried to steal the inflatable bear. They had an inflatable polar bear head that they skated out of. And like him, actually, no, it wasn't here. It was Jamie O'Leary, a Boston College.
That thing's product. Got to weigh like 300 pounds. I mean.
No, like you drag it. Yeah, it was a hoss of a thing. And like, he's just like, hey, he comes, like, we're like moving stuff out for the players and stuff as they're leaving. Because this is the final game of the team entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And like he stops me. He's like, hey, pick that end up. I'm like, okay. We got a midweight from the Zamboni ramp, and the equipment guy's like, Lears, don't. Like, we're going to have to pay that back. Then afterwards, I was sitting with the equipment guy, like, we're at a bar nearby, like, a eatery or whatever. I was, like, 17, so I couldn't drink. No, God, I was younger than that, because I was 99, so I was, like, 16. And he's like, God, I can only imagine, you go up the Mass Turnpike, you see Jamie O'Leary jumping on a goddamn polar bear head in his backyard. yeah, no, that's actually a pretty good visual. That's so ambitious.
I'd pay to see that.
I would too. I wonder where that bear head went to.
I want to know where the San Francisco spider went. Because they had a giant inflatable spider.
I think I saw them auctioning something like that off, like way back in the day.
It was huge, and like it didn't fit in the tunnel space, and so they never got to use it.
Yeah. I mean, doing the mascot head stuff, it has to be the worst job.
Yeah.
Because you have to like literally like rip it through after it's done, so you don't ruin it. And guys hated it too, because they come around and just whack the damn thing, trying to pop a hole in it.
Well, now they do like the ones that lower.
Yeah. Like the sharks and the predators do that. I know, especially.
Yeah.
And luckily for a lot of guys, the locker rooms are connected to the benches, so they don't have to go through anything. So they're like, oh, this is so great. This is fantastic. All right, well, that's our time. We've done it again. Thank you for listening. Thank you for enjoying us. Thank you to our Patreons. I mentioned them before. I'm going to mention them again. Brian, Damon, Mark, Trista, Matthew, Ethan, Chris, Mitch, Angela, Sean, thank you all. Patreon.com/FaceOfHockeyShow if you want to join it. Like I said, we're changing the reward tier. Man, we really overshot that. Boy, did we overshoot that. Anyway, that's it. That's all. Where can they find you?
NHL History Girl.
Find me at Scotty Waz. You can find the show at SDR Strong Bubble. We don't do much there. We just post shows, and you randomly throw photos up every now and again on it, and random facts. So
I keep forgetting it's there because I already have 2 accounts.
Right, exactly.
Like,
yeah, no, I'm like managing like 4 accounts. I'm like, it's terrible. All of it's terrible. So yeah, that's it. That's all for Jen. I'm Scott. Take care of yourself and someone else. Has been the Soder Strong Bubble on the Face Off Hockey Show Media Faction on Blog Talk Radio. We'll see you guys next week. Who knows what we'll talk about? We'll figure that out sometime during the week, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.